The following program, The Russ Belville Show, is intended for responsible adults only. We advocate to the repeal of marijuana prohibition for adults. We discuss the science, culture, and controversy about America's marijuana laws. We do not advocate any illegal activity and encourage all listeners to learn their state and federal marijuana laws. Opinions and claims made by guests and advertisers on The Russ Belville Show are their own, and The Russ Belville Show cannot be held legally responsible for their validity or reliability. Viewer discretion is advised.
You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it,
and it goes down smooth. Hey!
Spanning the continent to bring you the truth about cannabis and marijuana law reform.
I smoke pot and I like it a lot.
From the promise of legalization. Of prohibition.
One major responsibility is to encourage people to use less drugs.
The Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation. Brought to you by the National Cannabis Coalition.
Yeah, I hear you had a question for me.
Now, here's your host, Radical Russ Belville.
Yes, we do. We love the herb. And welcome, folks. It is Thursday, August 30th, 2012, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. Thanks for joining us on the show today. We are jam-packed with news and information and education for the cannabis community. We're glad you could join us. Make sure you visit our website at ncr420.com and visit our show blog at radicalrust.com for more information. Once again, we're here in the virtual studio. We're in the real studio here in Rolla J Studios. We don't have anyone in the virtual studio. That's what I was trying to say. Cannabis Carrie is off today, but joining us here in the real studio, working the Ninjaneer desk, we've got our own Brian the Red. How you doing, Brian? There you are.
I'm unmuted now. That's how I'm doing.
Fantastic. Glad to have you here. So once again, I'll be bringing the show today as best I can, running all the technical stuff and the news and everything. So stick with us. We're going to have ourselves a great show. Coming up on the news today in our Daily Cannabis Chronicles, some very interesting stories coming out in the cannabis community. We're going to give you an update on that LA dispensary ban. We're going to talk a little bit about Montana and a convicted Montana medical marijuana provider who died in prison. Then a look at the Reddit Ask Me Anything that President Obama participated in yesterday and how he once again ignored marijuana. Then we're going to take a look at some new data coming out of Washington State showing county by county breakdowns of the cost of marijuana prohibition in Washington State. Then we're going to take a look at the Marijuana Policy Project's list of the top 50 most influential marijuana users that was just released today. All that's coming up on our Cannabis Chronicle right after the first break. Then, at 20 after, we do our Daily Toker Tunes break. We always do that at 20 after so that we can relax and unwind and enjoy some sweet sounds. And today, it's Groovin' Thursday, where we play R&B, soul, rap, funk, hip-hop music. And today, we got some R&B soul from a sax player named Lakeisha Benjamin. We're going to check that out at 20 after. Then, at half past, we're going to bring back some video from the archives. Lately, Dr. Kevin Sabet has gotten a lot of play on Huffington Post and some other media outlets with his typical anti-marijuana, anti-drug legalization points. I'm going to bring you video from March when I was at the Baker Institute and my presentation against Dr. Sabet on that subject. And then at the end of the show, time for some radical rant. I'm going to call out the Oregon medical marijuana community. It's time they gave us some payback for helping them pass medical marijuana 14 years ago. All that's coming up on the Russ Belville Show, and make sure you hang out for hour two in Toker Talk Radio. We'll get more in depth on that top 50 list. We're also going to take a look at some actions by North Carolina Normal in response to the Democratic National Committee and the Democratic National Convention, and then some more explanation of the DUID cannabis provisions in Washington's I-502. We'll handle that in hour two, plus we'll take your calls at 971-533-7111. It's the Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation. Thanks for joining us here at Rolla J Studios in Potland, Oregon. You can always send me an email, russ@radicalrust.com, if you have any questions, comments, or suggestions. Stick around. I'll be right back after these messages with your Daily Cannabis Chronicle.
Hey,
The Russ Belville Show is blogging and podcasting daily at RadicalRuss.com. Support The Russ Belville Show. Text the word RUSS to 420-420 and connect with the National Cannabis Coalition. You can also send $10 to The Russ Belville Show right from your smartphone. That's RUSS to 420-420. You're listening to Radical Russ on The Russ Belville Show.
Well, I say little red collet, darling, your words to fails. Little red collet, you need a love that's gonna lay.
Tjena, jag heter David, PKA The Dirtball. Vi ska röka hela tiden. Alla år.
Help us legalize it. Text NCC to 420-420 and send $10 to the National Cannabis Coalition. Medical marijuana, industrial hemp, ganja sacrament, consumer cannabis. The topic of marijuana is heating up the news, and the Russ Belville Show catches you up with today's latest headlines. Now, here's our senior news editor, Cannabis Carey, with the Daily Cannabis Chronicle.
Carey is off today. I'm Russ Belville with your Daily Cannabis Chronicle. Reporting from Kathleen Miles at the Huffington Post, L.A. marijuana dispensary ban suspended. 50,000 signatures could force pot shop referendum. Medical marijuana patients in Los Angeles can exhale a sigh of relief, at least for now. LA's marijuana dispensary ban, which was set to go into effect in 1 week, has been temporarily suspended after patients and supporters delivered 50,000 signatures to force a referendum on the ban, the city clerk's office told the Huffington Post Thursday. The ban, which has the approval of Mayor Antonio Villagrosa and Police Chief Charlie Beck, intends to shut down about 1,000 marijuana dispensaries in the city, including those that have complied with the law. Instead of using dispensaries, groups of three or fewer marijuana patients would be allowed to grow marijuana in their homes. Gary Carver, a medical marijuana user who suffers from glaucoma and was one of the petition's signatories, said in a statement, quote, "We understand and appreciate the need for strict rules and regulations regarding dispensaries, but the outright ban went too far and will result in many sick and infirm patients suffering needlessly. What we need is a thoughtful policy that allows us to get our medicine and protects communities, not a short-sighted ban that causes us pain and thwarts the will of the people," end quote. The city clerk's office has 15 days to verify the signatures. If at least 27,425 signatures are verified, the city council has 20 days to choose to either repeal the ban or put it to the voters on the March 5th, 2013 ballot. Patients and supporters hope the ban will be repealed, but if it's put to a vote, they say they are confident Angelenos will support storefront access to medical marijuana. Well, good news on this, and kudos to the activists there in Southern California who worked so hard to collect those signatures. And the statement was exactly right. The people of Los Angeles and the people of California want to see safe access. Things going too far, dispensaries crossing the line, that is the fault of the LA City Council for not setting up regulations in the first place to deal with this. But you don't throw the baby out with the bathwater and just do an outright ban just because the city council couldn't get its act together and responsibly regulate these shops. It's time to work with the community and realize medical marijuana is not going anywhere. It's going to be in California. It's here to stay. Find a way to work this out with the activists and the patients who know what they're doing. News from the San Francisco Gate, reporting by Matt Voles of the Associated Press. Helena, Montana. A convicted Montana medical marijuana provider with a history of serious illnesses died Thursday after his transfer to a federal prison that could give him proper medical care was delayed for months. Richard Flores' death came weeks after a federal judge denied an attorney's request to release the 68-year-old Miles City resident while he appealed his 5-year sentence. U.S. District Judge Charles Lovell wrote in his August 7th order that it was unfortunate that Flores' transfer to the Bureau of Prisons medical facility was delayed, but, quote, "it is not factually or legally significant," end quote. Lovell sentenced Flores in April after Flores pleaded guilty to maintaining a drug-involved premises. Flores previously was diagnosed with dementia, depression, and numerous medical conditions, and Lovell recommended that he be evaluated by federal prison hospital officials to determine what facility would be best suited for him. Flores had been held at Crossroads Correctional Facility, a private prison in Shelby, while awaiting the Bureau of Prisons' decisions on where he would serve his sentence. He was removed from the Shelby facility Tuesday and was being held temporarily in a Las Vegas jail Wednesday when he suffered 2 heart attacks, renal failure, and kidney failure, according to his attorney, Brad Arndorfer. He was hospitalized, and his family decided early Thursday to take him off life support. Arndorfer said Flores' death was a failure of the federal judicial system at all levels. Well, once again, when we're talking about medical marijuana and we're talking about the legislature of Montana, we're talking about the Congress and the president and all of the people who continue to persecute these providers despite their states voting for this, it just reminds us that these aren't just people losing their jobs, losing their businesses. They're losing their health and they're losing their lives over this. A 5-year mandatory minimum sentence for this guy, a 68-year-old man with bad kidneys and a bad heart. And we can't even do the bare minimum of getting this guy into a federal prison that could take care of his needs. No, we just shuffle him off to any old prison, the Crossroads Correctional Facility, a private prison, mind you. Somebody made money off their stocks for holding this man and eventually letting him die. This is why we're here every day. This is why we're fighting to end this marijuana prohibition. This is why when people ask you why you're standing up for marijuana legalization, it's not that important, it's no big deal, you're just fighting for the right to get high, say no. We're fighting so nobody else has to die in a cage over a plant. Reason.com is reporting on the Reddit platform where President Obama joined the Ask Me Anything platform on Reddit yesterday. Lucy Steigerwald reporting. Yesterday afternoon, President Barack Obama took to the so-called front page of the internet, Reddit.com, in order to answer questions from users in an AMA, or Ask Me Anything. Almost 4 million page views crashed the servers, and Obama ended up answering a mere 10 questions out of more than 22,000. And he ignored a lot of the big issues. According to Slate magazine, quote, "popular questions about medical marijuana, soldiers with post-traumatic stress disorder, and the president's failure to close Guantanamo, meanwhile, went unanswered. $20 says he doesn't address this," one Redditor predicted correctly about the marijuana question. "Should have been titled, Ask Me Almost Anything," another grumbled. Now, as we look at this, and if you watch the Obama Ask Me Anything, you might have been very frustrated. I read the transcript from this, and once again, as happened with the YouTube forum, legitimate questions were passed over in favor of softballs for the president that do nothing to give us any information about how he's governing, what his policies are going to be. For example, one of the questions that got through on this Ask Me Anything was, "How do you balance family life and hobbies with being the president?" Another asked, "What is the first thing you'll do on November 7th, win or lose?" Another asked, "Who is your favorite basketball player?" And most irritating of all, questions were asked about his favorite White House beer recipe. Yes, the White House beer recipe. And that is leading to, I have a picture here to show you for that, but I've lost it. So we'll see if we can find that during break. But yeah, there's a new meme out. Gets asked dozens of times about his medical marijuana crackdown. Instead, answers a question about his recipe for homebrewed beer. And as I've pointed out many times, this is the first time a sitting president has manufactured drugs in the White House. News from the Thurston County chapter of the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws. Marijuana prohibition costs Washington County $18.5 million. Enforcing laws against the personal possession of marijuana cost the Washington County of Thurston, home to the capital city of Olympia, $18.5 million over a 10-year period, according to data analysis by the Thurston County chapter of Washington Normal. Rose Ellitz, a Thurston County Normal director who is a CPA with over 20 years' experience, analyzed 10 years of data from the FBI Uniform Crime Reports and the Washington Association of Sheriffs and Police Chiefs arrest statistics for the cities of Olympia, Tumwater, Lacey, Rainier, Tenino, Yelm, the Evergreen State College, and the Nisqually Tribe. Probably Tenino, right? For this study, the Thurston County Sheriff's Department was unable to provide adult arrest data for the years 2002 through 2006. County Sheriff's Department has indicated those statistics are not available. Financial information was gathered from city and county budgets or published financial statements to calculate the overall cost of enforcement. Then the overall cost of enforcement was divided by the total arrest for that jurisdiction to arrive at an average cost per arrest. In releasing the report, Normal Thurston County Director Rose Eilitz said, quote, these jurisdictions spent $18.5 million between the years 2002 and 2011 for marijuana possession enforcement. Each of these jurisdictions should adopt a lowest enforcement policy toward adult personal use of marijuana. A single arrest for possession can result in a lifetime of collateral consequences, making it difficult to get a job, find a place to live, or even open a banking account. There are better uses for our tax dollars. Well, you know, an even better solution instead of a lowest enforcement priority is how about a no enforcement policy by passing I-502 and legalizing possession of marijuana. Now, it's interesting that they come out with this $18.5 million number. There's another interactive page put up by the American Civil Liberties Union of Washington, ACLU-WA.org, and it's an interactive map on what is your county spending on marijuana law enforcement. Now, according to the ACLU, the number for Thurston County alone is less than what is being shown, claimed by the Washington County Normal chapter. The ACLU claims $6.2 million, not $18.5 million, of enforcement costs. Also, there's records for every county, including King County in Washington, where $34.9 million were spent over the past 10 years. And the Washington state total racks up to $211 million on marijuana prohibition enforcement alone. And news from Normal in North Carolina, the Democratic National Committee is holding their convention in Raleigh, North Carolina, and in response, North Carolina Normal will be hosting Libertarian presidential candidate Gary Johnson, former special agent Jamie Haas, and Southern rock artist Greta Gaines as they speak on behalf of the organization to raise awareness and support for ending marijuana prohibition. The North Carolina chapter of Normal is excited to have such an esteemed group of individuals to speak on behalf of the marijuana movement at this politically symbolic event. Legalization could generate approximately $10 billion annually in tax revenue and law enforcement savings. 17 states, along with the District of Columbia, have passed pro-marijuana legislation. With Colorado, Oregon, and Washington all voting on legalization initiatives this November, it is more important than ever that we bring as much attention to this issue as possible. End quote. The event information, it is September 4th at 5:30 p.m. Eastern Time. The location is Speaker's Podium at the corner of East Stonewall Street and South Caldwell Street in Uptown Charlotte. And I just would like to mention that Gary Johnson, Jamie Haas, and Greta Gaines have all been guests on my show. And if you look back in our archives at RadicalRust.com or YouTube.com/RadicalRust, I'm sure you'll be able to find all of their interviews. Gary Johnson, of course, former governor of New Mexico, running for the presidency under the Libertarian ticket. Jamie Haas was a former Immigrations and Customs Enforcement special agent who I met personally when I was last in Texas. And Greta Gaines is a Normal board member, professional snowboarder, and professional Southern rock musician. It's going to be a good event. Check out ncnormal.org.
It's 420 back in Idaho, where Russ and Carrie were born. So we have to go connect with our roots. You know what I mean? Please support these sponsors who support the Russ Belville Show.
Oh, have you?
All right, when we come back, we got time for our daily Toker tune. It's Groovin' Thursday, and we're going to get things a little soulful today with Lakeisha Benjamin, a little saxophone music. So stick around. It's the Russ Belville Show. Light them up if you got them.
Then you know you're talking to that reefer man.
Take marijuana off of the streets, put it in a store. We can make it harder for the teens to buy, sell it like a bottle of wine. Jobs for our people, money for schools, who could ask for more? Strict regulation, fund education, yes on 64.
Cannabinoids and health.
Cannabinoids.
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 Why am I having trouble saying that?
Cannabinoids.
Jeez.
Cannabinoids.
What a goof. Play more, play more if you can. You're looking for the dope weed. Fire it up. Play more, play more if you can. You're looking for the dope weed. Pony boy's a man. Play more, play more if you can. You're looking for the dope weed. Everyone knows music and marijuana go together, so let's wind up our 20 after break with the Russ Belville Show's Daily Toker Tunes, the best in pod-safe 420 music from around the web. Today is Groovin' Thursday, featuring rap, hip-hop, soul, and funk music. You can get downloads and more information about all our Daily Toker Tunes by visiting music.radicalrust.com. Now, sit back and enjoy your Daily Toker Tune.
I have to admit, folks, that I picked up on this next tune off the IOTA promo net based on the title of the album alone. It's called Retox. That's right, not Detox. Retox. Not a bad idea. Lakeisha Benjamin is the charismatic and dynamic saxophonist who's on this next tune. She has played with Stevie Wonder, Alicia Keys, The Roots, and Macy Gray. And she takes center stage in her own right with the release of her unconventional soul funk album, Retox. While she's made quite an impact with her impressive sax work on stage and on record, Benjamin opted for a slightly different take on Retox, allowing her talents as a composer and producer to share the spotlight with her funky sax. In fact, several of the CD's 12 tracks don't even feature saxophone. Quote, "This album is really a fruition of years of songwriting as much as it is a showcase for my sax playing and horn arrangements," said Benjamin. On Retox, Benjamin shows off her impeccable purist jazz resume with a deep kaleidoscopic and ingeniously arranged mix of old school soul and funk songs, as well as Stevie Wonder's classic, Don't You Worry About a Thing. An A-list of established and emerging vocalists such as Christy Warren, Amp Fiddler, Maya Azucena, China Black, and Melanie Charles join Benjamin on an album that's as electrifyingly diverse as the cast that plays on it. She says, quote, "I call my band Soul Squad because even as a kid, I always wanted to play like I was in an army of funky musicians." Well, let's get on to it. This is Get Down from Lakeisha Benjamin on your Groovin' Thursday Daily Toker Tunes. We'll be right back.
Dear Dad, how should I say this? You know how you enjoy a drink after work? Well, in many ways, I'm just like you. I have a good job, I work hard, but when I get home, I prefer to relax with marijuana instead of alcohol. They're a little similar, but marijuana is actually less damaging to my health. And frankly, I don't feel like crap the next day. I hope this makes sense. But if not, let's talk.
TalkItUpColorado.org. Start your conversation about marijuana, paid for by the campaign to regulate marijuana like alcohol.
Attention, National Cannabis Radio listeners. If you haven't heard the political pontifications of Lively and Mr. Libra on the Libra Lounge yet, be sure to visit here Wednesday nights at 6 Pacific or visit thelibralounge.com for archives and links to download current episodes. Be a lounger.
The Libra Lounge.
Marijuana is an addictive drug which produces in its users insanity, criminality, and death. Marijuana is the most violence-causing drug in the history of mankind. If the hideous monster Frankenstein came face-to-face with the monster of marijuana, he dropped dead from fright.
You know, it's not easy countering 7 decades of propaganda in a 2-hour show, but let's try. It's time for the Russ Belville Show's Reefer Madness Debunked.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome. And I just want to say I'm incredibly honored to be speaking here at the Baker Institute. I saw the list of panelists who were going to be appearing here. I saw more letters behind people's names than I see in a bowl of alphabet soup. PhDs and DAs and assistant chiefs and judges. And I kind of got to think, you know, why am I here? My goodness, I'm just a guy who, you know, grew up as a son of a musician, always been around people that had used marijuana in my life, and now I work for Normal. And I in the chapter outreach coordinator, I help coordinate 177 chapters around the country and around the world, including some fine people from Dallas-Fort Worth and Waco, Texas, who are here today. I also run Normal Show Live on the Normal Network, which is a live daily talk radio show where for 2 hours a day I talk to the people and I interview the people involved, some of the people that are in this room that are involved in fighting this war on drugs. So I think maybe why I'm here is because while I don't have any of that school book education on the issue of marijuana, I have a ton of real world experience here on the issue of marijuana. I'm thrilled here to be with Dr. Sabet, and we've gotten to speak a few times, and he's a wonderful man. And as far as people who have worked for the ONDCP goes, a very gracious person who has told me to my face he does not want to see me put in a cage for my use of marijuana, and I appreciate that. Thank you. But it is kind of intimidating because, you know, the man's going to Harvard and getting a PhD at Harvard. I mean, my biggest academic achievement was I was the Boise State mascot in 1985. I mean, he's worked in the White House. I once ate at a Waffle House. You know? But again, I think where I bring something to this debate is that I have skin in the game. I began smoking marijuana on July 4th, 1990, in a resort town called McCall, Idaho, with the guitar players in the band that I was playing with at that time. And I remember when that joint first went around the circle. And I remember, my father is a drug addict and an alcoholic, and I'd always been told, just say no, drugs are bad, and okay, don't do it, just don't do it. When I saw that joint go around, I thought, oh my God, I'm in a band with guys that do drugs. These guys do drugs. And I refused it the first couple times it came around. And I was really shocked because when I did refuse, I was a little worried because I'd heard about the peer pressure, and they all kind of went, eh, okay. And it's kept passing around. And after about 4 or 5 or 6 passes of this, and them giggling and just having a good old time and not really being any problem, I finally took a puff. And when I took that puff, I went, this is drugs? Really? This is what you were warning me about? I mean, I've been drinking since age 16. I'd woken up in strange places. I'd had tequila scars. I mean, I puked on my shoes. I've done some terrible things under alcohol. And when I smoked that joint, I went, really? This was the problem? It makes me happy and lightheaded and go to sleep and eat Funyuns? That's what you need to throw me in jail for? This is terrible. So I got skin in the game. And because of that, under this war on drugs, I have been affected by this daily. The federal law right now for the possession of even a speck of marijuana is a misdemeanor with a possible 1-year prison term and a $1,000 fine. Now, it's probably not going to happen, but it exists. It's there. That law is there. And for the past few years, when I've been living in Oregon, I've been growing marijuana plants. And for just one marijuana plant, the federal penalty is a felony with 5 years, $250,000 fine. And if you're growing a lot of marijuana plants, like this fine woman's son is, you're actually eligible for the death penalty in this country.
And I'm proud of you.
Penalty exists. We are one of 9 countries in the world that has a death penalty involved with marijuana. Now, you have to grow over 60,000 plants, make $2 million, $20 million over a certain number of years, continuing criminal enterprise, yada, yada, yada. But the fact exists, we have a death penalty for this plant. A death penalty. In Texas here, we've heard some of the folks talk about that, the misdemeanor, 6 months, probation, $2,000 fine, mandatory rehab. A plant is felony, 12 years, $10,000 fine. In Florida, it's 5-year felony for anything 21 grams or over. 21 of those sugar packets, 21 grams is about 3/4 of an ounce. Felony, 5-year sentence, $100,000 fine, and you lose your right to vote. And in Florida, you lose your right to vote as a felon permanently. After 5 to 7 years, you can apply to a clemency board to maybe get your right to vote back. This has resulted in 8.2% of all Floridians of voting age being disenfranchised and 19.8% of African-American voters being disenfranchised in the state of Florida. It's really hard to change the laws that criminalize you when you can't vote to change them. Even in my home state of Oregon, where people think, oh, it's all hippy-dippy liberal love fest, pot and love and patchouli and all that, yes, it is decriminalized, less than an ounce is a ticket. You do get a 6-month driver's license suspension, even if you aren't driving, and a $1,000 fine. But over an ounce in the state of Oregon is a felony, 10-year sentence, $100,000 fine. We go from 28 grams with a ticket to 29 grams is a 10-year felony. So it isn't even good even in the state of Oregon, where people think it's all hippy-dippy sun and light. And the folks here, and I saw a slide up there that said, oh, there's only 0.3% of people in prison and 0.1%. Well, first of all, sucks for them, huh? But for all the rest of the things that happen that have nothing to do with being in prison or being arrested. First of all, if you've been arrested, you can be considered a drug criminal for the rest of your life. That follows you around. If you're a student, you can lose your financial aid, because if someone's got a drug problem, the last thing we want them to have is a college education. You can lose your federal housing for being arrested for marijuana. It can be used against you in child custody cases. And these aren't just abstracts to me. These are my friends. Every person I know smokes marijuana. Every person I know and interact with directly smokes marijuana. And not just I smoked a joint at the class reunion. I'm talking daily and weekly marijuana smokers, and not just medical smokers, people like me who just like to smoke pot. That's all we like, just like to smoke pot. And even without the arrest, we've got people here like myself who've been living in fear of police officers. When I saw this assistant chief up here talking about, you know, the neighborhoods and the cities, I thought back to all the times when I wanted to call a cop, I wanted to interface with a police officer, but that thought was in the back of my head, better not. Are you sure you don't got something on you? You sure not going to come back to your house and want to check things out? You sure you're not going to want to bring a dog to your car? How many crimes go unreported? How many women live in domestic violence situations where they won't report the guy beating them because, well, they've got drugs, they might lose their kid? I mean, the tendrils of this are so intertwined, and I talk and deal with these people every day. And the bottom line is that this war on drugs essentially says to me, Russ Belbel, the federal government thinks you ought to be in a cage because you like to smoke pot. Now, if you'd like to go home and drink, you can drink Crown Royal until you pass out. That's fine. If you want to smoke, you can buy cigarettes and smoke until you get lung cancer and die. Don't got a problem with that. But if you want to smoke a little pot that never killed anyone, makes you happy, won't eat Funyuns, makes jazz sound good, we got to put you in a cage. I just think that's fundamentally wrong. Now, to this question, war on drugs has failed. Is legalization the answer? Well, as Russ Jones, the very well-named Russ Jones said, we don't have a war on drugs, we have a war on people. I have never seen a DEA agent point an automatic weapon at a marijuana plant. But a few of my friends working in dispensaries have had automatic weapons pointed at their heads. A few people that I've reported on have had armor-clad thugs breaking into their home, throwing flashbang grenades, wearing body armor, shooting their dogs while their children are in the house. But I have never seen point that gun at a plant. And while it is a war on people, it's not really a war on all people who use drugs. Like comedian Paul Mooney once said, I have the complexion of protection. I'm a middle-aged white guy. I'm not going to get busted for weed. Probably never. So it's not a war on people who use drugs. It's a war on some people who use drugs. And wait a minute, it's not even really a war on drugs, because in this society, we celebrate drugs. You can't turn on TV without seeing another drug ad. I mean, we got beer ads funding the Super Bowl. We got Viagra ads everywhere. Look, what's up with those two people in the bathtubs anyway? And we got the cartoon depression. Have you seen those drugs in the cartoon, the Abilify, where the woman's got depression? Is your antidepressant not helping? And she's got that robe of depression she wears around. Well, if that pill doesn't help you, we've got another pill to help the pill that doesn't help you. And notice that the depression robe never really goes away. It still kind of hangs out off the side. We're not curing anything. We're managing it. Because that's the comeback. That's where you get the comeback, pharmaceutical company. So it's not a war on all people who use all drugs. It's just some people using some drugs. And in fact, we celebrate drugs. Even the evil drugs, cigarettes, even the evil one, the one we all know is awful and terrible, we at least tolerate it. I used to work at a company that had paid for by the company a shelter outside, because we're in Portland, Oregon, it rains a lot, right? A shelter outside so the nicotine addicts could go and get their fix. Sounds different when I say it that way than smoke rate, doesn't it? Nicotine addicts to get their fix, paid for by the company, and willing to accept the productivity loss of people having out every 2 hours for 15 minutes to do their drugs. So don't tell me we don't have a war on drugs, we think drugs are bad. It's just some drugs and some of the people that are using them are bad. And when we call it a war on drugs, it's not even really a war on drugs, it's a war on marijuana. As was cited earlier, 52% of all arrests in the war on drugs are for marijuana, 88% for possession alone. Here in Texas, it's 97% of all marijuana arrests are for possession, as they were talking about, trace amounts and such, too. So what we really have here is not a war on drugs. What we have here is a war on certain American citizens using non-pharmaceutical, non-alcoholic, tobacco-free drugs. That's what we have. So the first premise of the question, war on drugs, is kind of not exactly a true premise. And the other part is, has failed. Has failed at what? What has it really failed at? Because if you look at this with the right perspective, the war on drugs is an incredible success. I mean, if you own pharmaceutical stock and you're worried about medical marijuana competing with Xanax or Paxil or Prozac or any of those drugs or the opiate drugs that you sell, well, the war on drugs is doing great to keep that natural cheap competition out of your market. If you are an owner of prison stocks, or you work as a prison guard in California, where the median income for a prison guard is $74,000 a year. By the way, speaking of well-funded drug lobby, that explains myself. If you're a cop, and you want to keep your thumb down on a certain neighborhood, a certain class of people, there's nothing better than the war on drugs for collecting fingerprints, getting people in the system, being able to shake them down, maybe find some other crime they might be up to. And if you're trying to provide jobs for underskilled, undereducated people, those jobs that have flown out to Mexico and China, the factory jobs, the manufacturing jobs we don't have anymore, the war on drugs was an incredible success in providing underground income for people, for keeping unemployment rates below what they would really be if we looked at inner city neighborhoods and tried to find out. I don't know, right, what's the black unemployment in most inner city neighborhoods, in the 15s, 20s, 30s? How much higher would it be if the kids that were dealing had to apply for unemployment instead? We would see massive amounts of unemployment. So if the war on drugs is all about creating jobs for cops and rehabs and prison guards and kids dealing in the streets, it's an amazing success. Well, let's take it at its face. Let's take it what we're really intending here. The war on drugs is a failure because of what Nixon said, right? Nixon said we're going to do war on drugs, we're going to end abuse and dependence, reduce the harms, all that. Well, people who've been up here before have already told you all about that it hasn't really worked. So, is legalization the answer? Well, again, depends. Is it the answer to stopping all people from ever getting high and using drugs and ever causing any harms? Not at all. No, no. In fact, if you legalize, as some people have suggested, there might be a slight uptick. There might be some people that have never tried pot and think, well, it's legal now, let me get a shot. There might be people using pot now who think, oh, well, now that it's accessible but cheaper, I'll use more of it. But again, people are smoking pot now, and I haven't yet seen much harm from that in the first place. Maybe the legalization is the answer if our goal is to reduce harm. The harm of the crime and the prohibition-related violence, the harm of kids dealing in the high school parking lots, then maybe it is the answer. But for this entire question, I reject the initial premise. I reject the entire initial premise that it's any of the government's business or wherewithal or desire to stop me from smoking pot. I don't see the need to do so. I have been an employed citizen. I have worked and paid taxes for 20 years. I've consulted on Wall Street. I've worked in hospitals. I've done IT work, some of the most complex brain mechanics that you can get involved with, doing network analysis and such. I always figure if Carl Sagan could smoke pot, so could I. It didn't seem to hurt my brain much either. So when people are talking about this war on drugs, you always have to boil it down to the fact that we're talking about arresting people and messing with their lives in an attempt to stop them from smoking pot. And we must address, is that even really something that's worth doing? Somebody said, the DA here said, or the assistant chief, what do we have, stone society? Oh, we end up with a stone society. Heaven forbid we have more people that are mellow, get along with each other, eat some Funyuns now and then. Oh, what a terrible world it would be. Now, I don't mean to diminish the problems of other drugs. I have experience in that realm, too. Like I said, my father's a drug addict. My father was addicted to speed. He was addicted to marijuana. He was addicted to alcohol, mostly an alcoholic. But for all those years, my dad was an alcoholic. And I was suffering as a child from the things that happened. Him being away for 2 weeks at a time. Him getting all drunk and a little wacky in the house. And the terrible things that happened to me as a kid. Not once did any group of cops ever try to break down the door, throw in a flashbang grenade, and haul my dad off for my well-being. Never happened. But if it had been the pot, they'd have done that. We let people be alcoholics, but we don't throw them in prison for it. We do deal with their alcoholism if it causes problems to other people. But for the alcoholic itself, we don't throw them in prison. And this is happening not just to random statistics. I'm going to give you the stats. 102 million people have tried it. 26 million people in America will smoke pot this year. That's more tokers than Texans. And they said, don't mess with Texas, don't mess with tokers. We are nothing to fear. There is nothing scary about us. Our smoking pot is not going to cause us to run riot in the streets, go crazy, start shooting heroin or anything like that. We are productive, responsible, law-abiding citizens. Now, I know some of you might see, well, I see those pot rallies and all the tie-dye hippies and the long hair and the piercings and the dreadlocks and, you know, they're a little crazy and they support Ron Paul and stuff. Whatever. Stereotype you want to put in there. But understand that because of the illegality of marijuana, you are only seeing the tip of the iceberg. The people with nothing to lose. The people who can be out and proud. You're not seeing the doctors, the lawyers, the teachers, the cops even, who use marijuana because they can't be out and proud. They can't talk about this. Now, and one more stat. 2.6 million people in America are just like me. They smoke pot every day this month. 2.6 million people smoke pot every day this month. That's more than the population of Houston, Texas. We cannot have a policy that says the entire population of Houston, Texas are criminals. It makes no sense. And finally, to wrap up, whenever we talk about this war on drugs and the other side wants to talk about what the effects might be, we get a lot of a muddying of the waters with weird statistics, things like, well, we can't legalize marijuana because alcohol and tobacco only bring in $40 billion worth of taxes, but they cost $400 billion worth of social effects. Yeah, that would be scary if marijuana were alcohol or tobacco. But alcohol and tobacco, if I'm not mistaken, kill people and are highly addictive. And marijuana is not. So I'm not scared by that. And there's a whole lot, you know, we don't really lock people up. Not a whole lot of them. Well, even one person locked up for using marijuana is one too many. And finally, this idea that we want to cut the head off the snake. I heard that. And to cut the head off the snake, we're going to go after the big guns. The big guns like Patricia Spotted Crow, just north of us in Oklahoma, who's doing 12 years in prison for the sale of $31 worth of marijuana. Two dime bags she sold. She's got 12 years in prison, separated from her children. What about the children, right? How about Dale Schaefer and Molly Fry, medical marijuana providers in California, growing marijuana under the state's Prop 215 in accordance and cooperation with their state, county, and local people, busted by the feds, now serving 5 years in prison each. Dr. Fry is a cancer survivor, breast cancer. She was growing it for other cancer survivors. She's in prison. And a friend of mine from Georgia, whose daughter was rousted from her bed in the middle of the night, 16 years old, grabbed by her hair by SWAT teams with assault rifles pointed at her head because some kid in her class knocked her off for having a gram or two. These are real stories happening to real people. So why not legalize marijuana? Why not? Well, it's not harmless, but it's not alcohol. It's not tobacco. Far less harmful than that. The results we've seen with alcohol and tobacco show that we can legalize the worst of drugs and yet bring down the harm from them through regulation and education. And it separates marijuana from those hard drugs that are truly devastating and cause the basis of meth that we were scandalized by. And finally, remember, when anybody says that we need to continue what we're doing or make cosmetic changes around the edges, they are saying one of two things. Russ Belville needs to be in a cage, or Russ Belville needs to be forced into a rehab he doesn't need, forced to be mandatorily re-educated, forced to be P-tested when he's not causing harm to anyone. Thank you for your time.
Thank you much. I've seen that video before here on our show, but that was a perspective from the audience that I just got posted on YouTube, so I wanted to give a look at that. And it's interesting listening to it from the audience's perspective, getting a little bit of different reactions and figuring out how some of the lines went over. So hope you don't mind me replaying that. That'll be up on our YouTube channel a little later on today. When we come back, a little bit of time left for a mini rant. I'm going to talk about a little bit more on Measure 80 here in Oregon and the desperate need to pass legalization. Stick around. It's the Russ Belville Show. We'll be right back.
You're tuned into the Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation.
Georgia.
Hi, this is Willie Nelson. Alcohol prohibition didn't work in the 1920s, and marijuana prohibition isn't working today. It's time we stopped arresting responsible marijuana smokers. It's the fair thing to do.
For more information, contact NORML, the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws. Call toll-free 888-67-NORML or visit their website at norml.org.
Do you really want to legalize marijuana? Prove it. Join the National Cannabis Coalition at nationalcannabiscoalition.com, where your donations directly support PotNet and the Russ Belville Show. Free speech ain't free, you know.
You want answers?
I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.
You want answers?
You have offended my family.
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers.
I want the truth.
And you have offended Shaolin Temple.
You can't handle the truth.
Surely you can't be serious.
I am serious. And don't call me Shirley.
Radical rant.
All right, everybody, just a little time here for a little mini rant. Yesterday, I talked about the Oregon Cannabis Tax Act, now known as Measure 80, and a couple of stories that had come out, very disturbing. One telling us that $3 million has been raised for legalization, $2 million in Washington, $1 million in Colorado, and something like $300 in Oregon. The number was pretty low. Very, very scary proposition. And the other thing we heard is how the campaign for Measure 80 is still in the red, having not even paid the petition gatherers who got it on the ballot yet, much less funded any money for commercials or advertising. And this has got us very, very scared here at the Russ Belville Show and National Cannabis Coalition and all around the activist community, because it's one thing to get something on the ballot, but if it gets on the ballot and belly flops and just, you know, has a disastrous turnout, that can be more harmful than not getting something on the ballot in the first place. And again, it's not the time to form circular firing squads or start pointing fingers. It's time to rally around this. Getting it on the ballot, it's there. It's there for everyone. We don't have to depend on just one campaign or one person or one organization to promote this. Everybody can promote this, and we are looking at possibly forming another type of coalition activity, a PAC or something, to get some funding for this and to get this passed in the state of Oregon. This is the true legalization that the opponents, the wild-eyed opponents in Colorado and Washington on the medical marijuana side, this is what they've been looking for. And like I said yesterday in the Washington rant, if you don't like what you're getting in Colorado or Washington as far as a legalization initiative, look at what we got here in Oregon and help us set the precedent. Help us show the rest of the nation that you don't have to put in limits, that you don't have to put in per se DUIDs, that you can pass marijuana legalization and you can do it at the grassroots level. Washington and Colorado are going to be fine. They got big money, six-figure donors that are contributing to those campaigns. But the state of Oregon, this is the true grassroots initiative. This is the true from the people initiative. And we together can fund this. I know how much money you're spending on weed out there. I know how much you put together to buy a bag. Put some of that aside and send it into the campaign, or do something, get together with other like-minded people and fund your own ads. There's nothing in this country that says you can't. And after Citizens United decision, we can form PACs. We can form political action committees that can take money, that can do ads for the campaign. Let's make this happen. And I want to make a specific appeal to the medical marijuana community here in the state of Oregon. You know that the only reason we've got medical marijuana here in Oregon is because in 1998, a whole lot of people who aren't medical marijuana patients voted for medical marijuana, knowing that it was the right thing to do, that putting patients in a cage for their use of medicine was a moral outrage and must be stopped. Well, now it's time to address the larger moral outrage, putting anyone in a cage for their marijuana use. It's time for the medical marijuana community to band together like they did for Measure 74, just 2 years earlier, and start campaigning for the legalization of marijuana. Campaign for Measure 80, OCTA2012.org, CannabisTaxAct.org. We can do this. And you know, if we do this in a grassroots way, this is going to be even better than having it pinned to one particular person or campaign in Washington or one particular person or campaign in Colorado, where their communities are becoming divided and fractured over allegiances and egos and past grudges and slights. While here in Oregon, we have the opportunity to band together. There's new leadership in many of these organizations in the state of Oregon now, and we can coalesce. We can form a coalition now to make this happen and show that it's not one person's idea. There is no I legalize something. It's we legalize something. That's the way we're going to make this happen. We are going to band together as a group. We're going to show that there's a broad coalition of people that support this broad type of legalization, where the definition of personal possession and personal cultivation is up to the person, like it is for alcohol. We keep saying treat marijuana like alcohol. Well, here it is. Who tells you how much alcohol that you can buy at the store? Nobody. As long as you're not buying kegs after kegs after kegs. And even then, you can sign for that kind of stuff. There are legitimate ways of buying lots of alcohol if you want to. Also, there are legitimate ways of brewing lots of alcohol or brewing wine that exist that should be applied to marijuana as well. And OCTA 2012 does that. The Measure 80 Cannabis Tax Act does that. And most of all, hemp. Oh my God. Complete legalization of hemp and all seeds defined as hemp. That's something in Oregon Cannabis Tax Act that a lot of people aren't recognizing. All seeds, even seeds for growing drug marijuana will be classified as hemp and openly available for sale. If that's the kind of legalization you want to see, get with us, get involved, get organized, and we can make this happen. We'll have more news on that as it develops, and trust me, we're going to help develop it. But that's all the time we got for hour one here. Stick around for hour two. Toker Talk Radio got all sorts of interesting stuff on the back burner. A stupid stoner story coming out of Spokane, Washington. Thanks to our chat room for that one. We got some more response on I-502's DUID provision from a attorney, Alex Newhouse, in Washington. We're also going to take a look at Marijuana Policy Project's top 50 most influential marijuana users, see if your favorite is on the list, and plenty more. Your calls as well at 971-533-7111. For Brian the Red, I'm Radical Russ. Thanks for joining us. Until next time, take care of each other, tokers.
This is the Russ Belville Show. The Russ Belville Show is blogging and podcasting daily at RadicalRuss.com.
You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you try it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you try it, you roll it, you smoke it, and it goes down smooth.